Welcome to Weekend Watchlist, a look at what's screening and streaming brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. I'm Mia. He's Slim.
Yellow.
And there, Mitchell.
Hi.
And together, we are going to dig through what's dropping this summer, 2024, what's in our own personal watchlist for this year, and we're also going to make our own shocking predictions for what's going to happen to the current size of our watchlists.
We back, baby. One more time, ... So we normally talked about upcoming movies that were coming out this weekend, but in this giant-sized episode, we're going to go down the list to reveal the most watch-listed movies on Letterboxd dropping this summer. Everyone else is probably thinking about the beach, you know, getting a nice juicy cheesesteak to eat while you watch the sun go down on the sand with your loved one, the loved one being the cheesesteak. But we're thinking about movies right now.
Yeah, the only beach that I think about is the beach that makes you old from the movie Old. We all remember where we were. I'm still watching it, still checking it out. What a good movie. But
four stars.
That's a thing of the past. That's, you know, that beach made me old a long time ago. I'm here now. We're going to talk about the top 10 most anticipated films of the summer by the Letterboxd community, ranked in order based on watch list numbers, how many people have put these movies on their watch list. These are all movies coming out during quote unquote the summer movie season, if you will. So releasing from May through August. We are dropping this episode. We're recording this big day. The Fall Guy coming out in theaters,
yeah.
Guys. It is out now. If you're listening to this, you can go see it right now. Wait until after the episode, but you can go check it out. You can see what Gosling and Blunt are up to. So that movie, The Fall Guy, it was, you know, full disclosure here, it was in the top 10 most watchlisted. But since it's out now,
yeah,
two people on this record right now have seen The Fall Guy. So, Slim, what did you think? What was the... I saw your review on the Letterboxd.
I mean, this might be quoted maybe on a poster at some point in the future, but if you want to quote my review, a triumph. 5 stars for The Fall Guy. I saw it this week. I gave it a 5 bang. Gosling... he should be investigated because he might be the most charismatic man alive. And there's something off. I don't understand how he does it. But his like eyes, his hair, his dirty blonde hair, the way he looks at me when I'm in the theater. And also Emily Blunt, her charisma is off the charts as well. So I had a great time at the movies. My wife and I went to this early screening.
I did hear that your son passed on the opportunity to go see it, right? James was, he
I
said
sent
no
James
go.
A trailer in the morning. I was like, hey, you want to go see this tonight? He's like, it looks cool, but no thanks. So he passed on Fall Guy. Honestly, I think he made a big mistake, personally.
He's a Ryan Reynolds fan, right? That's the one that he goes for. He's holding out for if.
We don't have enough time in the episode to debate Ryan Reynolds versus Gosling. Mia, you liked Fall Guy? You had fun, right? Fun.
Fun. Oh, that's interesting. I think that, Slim, I think that one thing we can agree on is how beautiful Ryan Gosling is, how he is a star. Yeah. I am allergic to him in a Ryan Reynolds type role. I think that this role is very Ryan Reynolds coded, and especially because it's directed by David Leitch, who might be your favorite auteur, right, Slim?
I mean, David Leitch, the god, people are saying when they leave the theater. He's like the
one
Denny Villeneuve. He's the Denny Villeneuve of action
that, yes.
films.
You heard it here first, folks. That is maybe the first time anybody has ever said that. No. The Fall Guy is cute. I like how they really leaned into the romance of it all because, like, I am just not really an action movie girl. I was there for the romance. And they mentioned Notting Hill in the film. So, you know, I can't complain about that. I cannot complain about that one. But no, we are on different sides of the fence. We are on different sides of the fence.
Yeah, we're on opposite sides of the tracks, you name it. Any other metaphor we can come up with. Before we get into number 10 on the watch list, folks, one of my favorite pastimes is to go through Mia's diary entries for a movie I'm about to see. And if there's just one of the... We need to come up with a name, like a silent entry. You know, like, what do we call that when there's no rating, there's no heart? And it could just be like an amazing experience, You know, in that silent entry, or it could be no good.
It's almost like a drive-by, just like a quick, like, just drop it, you know. Yes. I saw it, not talking about it. It's like a hit and run more. Like,
DoorDash.
I saw it, not talking about it. Don't ask me about it. Don't come around.
Mm-hmm. Well, should I reveal? I'll reveal my Fall Guy actual star rating, which I am going to drop. Sometimes I wait to drop the star rating until it's released because I want people.
Let me see if I have music for this, for you to drop this star rating. Let me see if I can cue it up here.
Oh, my God.
2.5 stars for the Fall Guy.
Okay. Wow. Breaking news,
folks.
Exactly
half of your rating. Exactly half.
You're not getting this, folks, on actual Letterboxd. You have to listen to Weekend Watchlist when we post episodes, maybe once every 3 to 4 months. Mitchell, we need to get into this list. It's a big list, right?
It's a list of 10 movies, so you can determine by yourselves whether you consider that big or not. But I won't make up anybody's mind. But yeah, let's just get into it, guys. Let's number 10 on the list, most watch-listed movies, summer 2024 by the Letterboxd community. I never know how to pronounce this. Cuckoo? It's not cuckoo, right? Cuckoo?
What? It's not cuckoo? It's cock-oo?
I'm just glad it's not me who's getting raked over the coals here for pronunciation. I've never seen Mitchell stop in their tracks so fast when they came across a word.
Cuckoo. I'm being word is coming in. I'm being informed. It is Cuckoo. Releasing August 9th in theaters from Neon, directed by Tilman Singer. The synopsis for this one, after reluctantly moving to the German Alps with her father and his new family, Gretchen discovers that their new town hides sinister secrets as she's plagued by strange noises and frightening visions of a woman pursuing her. Now, this one stars Hunter Schafer. Hunter Schafer season. We're in it. It's happening. Dan Stevens is in there playing a little weirdo. Jessica Henwick. It has played. So it premiered at the Berlin Film Festival. It's played at some other film festivals. It's sitting at a 3.1 average rating right now on Letterboxd.
Okay,
but
respectable.
That trailer's buzzing. I've seen that trailer. Yeah. Trailer's pretty hot. Mia, what are your vibes on, you know, say it however you want, the title of this movie.
Cuckoo. I am very interested in the fact that it is a woman pursuing her. It's just really refreshing to, you know, to see a woman doing bad things. Love that. And Hunter Schafer, you are a freaking star.
This is the first Hunter Schafer, maybe anything I've ever seen. So I've never watched Euphoria. She's
not
in
a Euphoria
boy. Not a big
she
Euphoria,
is in Euphoria
boy.
Yeah.
But the one review that made me more interested, even more so than the trailer, which I liked, was from Cobb. 5 stars, Barbarian's Deranged Sister. That's a really good pitch for someone like me, for Cuckoo from Neon. So I'm pretty excited to see this when I can get my hands on it.
It's also got, Dan Stevens is kind of having a year already within the first kind of like half of this year. So he's got Abigail that he was in, pretty fun in that. He's in this, and he was in Slim, I think your favorite movie of all time, Godzilla X Kong, right?
Another 5-bang. You know, I don't just throw out 5-star ratings, you know, willy-nilly.
Did you actually 5-star it?
I did. It's a really sweet review. It's one of the read Slim's review of Godzilla X Kong, listeners, I would say give that a read. Any reviewer Slim is talking about seeing in movies with his son makes me cry a little bit. It's the sweetest thing in the world. Didn't want to go see Fall Guy though.
my familial theater experiences, like if we have fun and we laugh, it's veering towards 5 stars. So
Long Legs. This is coming out July 12th, also via Neon. So they've got some spooky stuff coming. It's directed by Osgood Perkins. Here is the synopsis. FBI agent Lee Harker is a gifted new recruit assigned to the unsolved case of an elusive serial killer. As the case takes complex turns, unearthing evidence of connections to occult practices, Harker discovers a personal connection to the merciless killer and must race against time to stop him before he strikes again. And the cast is Micah Monroe is Lee Harker, and Nicolas Cage is the titular Long Legs. So these posters are scary, y'all. Yeah. That's just what I want to say. First off, if you have not seen these Long Legs posters and marketing materials, oh my God, I'm going to brag. I'm pretty brave about horror movies. I'm quite brave because I was desensitized in third grade after watching The Ring. But these are freaking me out. How do you feel?
Yeah, I think I'm stoked for this movie because it gives very like Silence of the Lamb vibes. I love that movie, and it like feels like I just love the tone that it seems to be going for. But yeah, the posters are rad. The teasers are really rad. Like they're really not, Neon is like not giving anything away with this. And I feel like the biggest thing drumming up excitement for it is the marketing campaign. And I feel like it's a reminder of what a really strong marketing campaign can do for a movie. Like when I'm seeing the posters and the trailers and people buzzing about them on social media, I'm like, I can't remember the last time, like maybe Cloverfield is like the last time that I can remember like a marketing campaign that was like so cagey and getting people like, what even is this? Like, you know, I just can't wait to see more of what it is. I don't know. Slim, do you remember the last like marketing campaign that got you amped like this?
Fall Guy, honestly. When those trailers were hitting, I was like, my
mom did text me this morning and say the Fall Guy marketing team deserves an award.
I've seen so many videos of Emily Blunt on like a media tour, and all their videos together are adorable. So whatever like interviews they're promoting, like they're all fun. No, but I can't think of a recent one where people were like making messes in their pants from fear seeing trailers for this movie. So I'm very excited. I also really like Micah Monroe. I liked Watcher when that came out a couple years ago. That was fun. So she's making some great decisions here for films. And I'm into it.
Aria Follows, Queen.
Next on our list at number 8, Inside Out 2, coming June 14th from Pixar, directed by Kelsey Mann. Synopsis: teenager Riley's mind headquarters is undergoing a sudden demolition to make room for something entirely unexpected. New emotions, joy, sadness, anger, fear, and disgust, who've long been running a successful operation by all accounts, aren't sure how to feel when anxiety shows up. And it looks like she's not alone. Inside Out 2, I don't think I've rewatched the first Inside Out, maybe since it had come out. I honestly didn't even know they were planning on making a second one until like they made the announcement that like Inside Out 2 coming in the summer. I'll see it. I still enjoy the Pixar movies. This looks like it might be a good family movie to watch, just like the first one was. Mia, where do you stand on Inside Out and its new sequel?
Ooh, so similarly, I've only seen it one time and I enjoyed it, but I was very upset by it, which was why I did not revisit. Sorry to Inside Out. I do like Kyle MacLachlan, Letterboxd member Kyle MacLachlan, I should say.
Yes.
As the hot father. That was actually the main reason why I showed up to the film, was to see Kyle MacLachlan as the hot cartoon father. And that's why I'll be here again for Inside Out 2. Huh, anxiety is really trending these days, huh, folks? But I do want to gatekeep anxiety. Some of us have been there from the very beginning. But I really feel like Puss in Boots: The Last Wish just made every animated movie want to talk about anxiety. And I don't even want to say that in like a cynical way, because I do think it's actually very important to introduce this concept to children and young adults. And people who maybe are having a hard time putting these anxious feelings into words, as, you know, the world gets worse and worse every day. So hopefully they explore it well. You know, Pixar is very, very well known for exploring emotions well. So,
yeah, I like you guys. I saw the first one when it came out. I liked it. I did feel like it crosses that bridge in a nice way of being like very accessible for kids while also hitting on some deeper themes that maybe even like, depending on how old you are when watching it, maybe it doesn't like hit you. Like it almost like subconsciously embeds in you, like you're learning about this kind of stuff. And I really admire that. I think the Toy Story movies have always done like a really great job of doing that kind of thing as well. Inside Out's like an interesting one where I remember when it came out, people being like, this is one of the best Pixar movies. Like, oh my God, they're back on track, because it was like 5 years since like Toy Story 3. And they had some ones that people didn't like quite as much between the two. But when I think about it now, like I can't remember the last time I heard anybody talking about Inside Out. Like when people talk about the best Pixar movies, it still is like Incredibles and Toy Story or like
Finding Nemo.
Finding
Nemo. For me.
Finding Nemo. But even something like Turning Red or like Soul, I feel like has like popped more culturally in a way that like the first Inside Out hasn't lasted as much. I don't know if I'm just, if I'm wrong about that, you know, like I could be, I'm just, and you know, in correct circles, but I'm just curious about this one coming out now and the cultural like tail that the first one has had. I mean, it is still Kyle MacLachlan's, this is the first Inside Out is his most popular movie on Letterboxd, which is interesting. Diane Lane, who plays the mom as well. So
I wanted to correct myself already because my memory is so bad. I have rewatched this for the Letterboxd show 3 years ago. I watched it July 25th, 2021, and I gave it 5 stars. When Sadness Talks to Bing Bong, Help. That was my review.
Well, let's talk about another movie that Slim has seen. Robot Dreams, number 7 on this list, coming out in theaters May 31st, several months after it received an Oscar nomination for Best Animated Feature. Very interesting strategy there, Neon. Directed by Pablo Berger, coming out. It's another animated movie, so we got two animated ones in a row here on the list. This one is about a dog who lives in Manhattan, and he's tired of being alone. I definitely feel you there, dog. One day, he decides to build himself a robot, a companion. Their friendship blossoms until they become inseparable to the rhythm of 80s NYC. One summer night, dog, with great sadness, is forced to abandon robot at the beach.
No!
Will they ever meet again?
What?
Slim, how is that like a spoiler in the synopsis? How early into the movie does he abandon him at the beach? I watched the trailer and that is not conveyed in the trailer at all.
He's forced at gunpoint?
You know, it's not necessarily a major spoiler just because it's a big part of the story. So don't worry about that being considered too spoilerish. But
I'm not going to watch this now. I feel like I've seen the whole movie.
One less watch list on this episode. I might remove it from 7th position.
Weekend unwatch list.
I thought it was interesting to spotlight this one too because, you know, like you said, this was nominated for an Oscar. It's had one of those kind of weird releases where some people have seen it, but then you still have to wait a while. It's just fascinating to see the journey of certain movies that are, you know, in the Oscar hunt, but like not readily available to even really go see in theaters necessarily. So this one is very highly rated among all of my friends who have seen this. There's one review that I wanted to spotlight, from Joe. Whoever said this was the animated Past Lives needs to pay for my therapy bills because they would be correct. Ooh. Stunning film. When you start saying things like that, like animated Past Lives, you know, eyebrows are going to go up like, okay, calm down. Like that's a bit much. I liked it a lot. It's very cute. It didn't have the kind of emotional connection for me that Past Lives did. I love Past Lives. But
that's right.
This is a very adorable movie. I think people are really going to have a lot of fun. You know, it's not like there's no talking in it, you know, so it's told by what's on screen, the animation and music. So they did a really good job at that.
A movie without talking?
I've never heard of a movie that didn't have words. So I don't even know what they would call that, to be honest.
A movie that does. Mia, are there any movies that do have talking on this list?
Oh, that's a good question. I believe there is. Oh, a little film called Hitman. Ooh, select. Theaters, May 24th, streaming on Netflix, June 7th, and directed by the great Richard Linklater. Here's the synopsis. A cop working undercover as the most in-demand hitman in Houston breaks protocol in order to help a desperate woman escape her abusive boyfriend. Thank you, hitman. Thank you. So I actually have seen this film. It's been hitting the festival circuit. It's been getting a lot of buzz since last fall. There was a little bit of a weird delay with the release, but it's finally, finally, finally coming out on Netflix. It's got a 3.8 average rating.
Okay.
That's pretty high. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We already, for our loyal listeners, we did already cover this on our 2024 year preview spectacular. But now I've seen it. Yay. So I can say some things. Mostly, it is way better than the poster implies. I'm sorry to anybody who has had to see the Hitman poster. It's
not
upsetting.
A great poster.
It is upsetting. it doesn't really accurately represent the sex appeal of this film. It is erotic. There is chemistry. There are sparks flying. And I also really love how it's kind of a showcase for Glenn Powell and Richard Linklater's working relationship. They worked together on Everybody Wants Some in 2016, and then on Apollo 10 and a Half, and then now this one. And Glenn Powell actually co-wrote it with Richard. I think it's beautiful that these Texan boys have made this film. And Mitchell, lots of comparisons to Out of Sight. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, this has been... Like, I'm a big Richard Linklater fan, my good friend Richard Linklater, and...
Loved your interview with him, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mia. Mia, thank you so much for saying that. And I was amped for this, and then when the festival review started, I hit it on Letterboxd, was seeing so many people referencing Out of Sight as a comparison point, one of the greatest movies of all time, so was very hyped for this. And I'll say, between... So my big development, I haven't seen it. I haven't been lucky enough like Mia to hit one of these cool little LA screenings. But my big development and my anticipation for this since the last time the three of us spoke about it, guys, I'm on the Glenn Powell train. I'm all aboard.
Choo-choo!
Between when we talked before and now, I've seen Anyone But You. The Twisters trailer has been playing a plenty. I've rewatched Top Gun Maverick. I'm like... fully on board. And that's exciting news for me as somebody who has very much not really been vibing with most of these like 20s and 30s guys that have been being pushed on us. Like, I feel like that for me, this generation of movie stars, it's just kind of slipping. There's few who have really popped for me. Glenn Powell, that's a movie star. I'm ready. Yeah. I'm ready for Hitman. I'm ready for Twisters. Let's get it going.
Can
get
I ask? I gotta ask. So I've been on the Glenn Powell train since Scream Queens, where he played Chad Radwell. And I just want to ask if anybody also watched season one of Scream Queens.
I was about to ask you about that, because in his TMDB description, like, they call out his breakthrough performance in Fox comedy horror series Scream Queens, which I'd never heard of.
Oh, well, it's a Ryan Murphy series. He is so funny. He was the highlight of the entire cast for me. His comedic timing. He's playing like a dumb frat guy boyfriend. And he's just perfect in the role. So he'd been on my radar for a while, and I'd been rooting for him. And I actually went to go see this film with a self-described Glenn Powell agnostic. She was not... She had not decided how she fell on the Glenn Powell train. She wasn't sure she had a ticket to ride the Glenn Powell train yet. After she saw this movie, she's fully on board. Choo choo choo. So
we're doing
high praise. Just
guys,
saying.
Do I have to watch Scream Queens? I don't know what's
you
going
might
on.
Have
Maybe
to.
I'll watch Scream Queens. I did look up. I did see. So like, I knew that him and Linklater had done the other two movies before that you mentioned, Mia. I also realized, looking at his letterbox, he apparently was in Fast Food Nation, which was a Linklater movie from 2006. I need to rewatch. I saw that when it came out. I need to rewatch that and see. He must have been a little baby in that.
Yeah. He talked about, there was a Q&A after the screening, and he talked about, how he's known Richard for that long. So I should have mentioned that in my spiel about their working relationship. So thank you very much, Mitchell. There is your Glenn Powell ex Richard Linklater lore.
Come on the pod, Glenn. Come on the podcast.
Glenn.
Glenn. Number five. We're in the top five. Kinds of Kindness. June 28th. Lanthimos. Synopsis. A man seeks to break free from his predetermined path. A cop questions his wife's demeanor after her return from a supposed drowning. And a woman's quest to locate an extraordinary individual prophesied to become a renowned spiritual guide. Yorgos is back already. I feel like Poor Things is barely in our rear view. And then this anthology ? Was announced.
Yes.
Mitchell, what's happening here with Yorgos? The big return.
We're in an interesting world right now. Pandemic times, strikes were happening. I feel like this lining up so soon after Poor Things is probably a symptom of that. And I mean, him and Emma Stone are just like, they're just working. They're already like working on making another movie together. They're really like flying. It's nice to see just like a collaborative duo that is like so in sync with each other. I think even as somebody who admittedly, I didn't like Poor Things, guys.
I'm not
the biggest Emma Stone fan. I'm very like Yorgos. Like Yorgos for me is somebody who I like all of his movies other than Poor Things. I've liked everything, but like, and I really like The Lobster. I really like Dogtooth, but I haven't had that one that's been like me. I know he's like one of your like guys. And like, for me,
he's
I haven't had the one to like
working director.
Yeah. So very much one of your guys. Like I haven't had that one that's like fully clicked for me where I'm like, this is my movie. And I don't know if this one's gonna be it, but I do think that bringing in Jesse Plemons is a good move for me. One of like my favorite working actors, obviously him, Willem Dafoe back in it. I loved Willem in Poor Things. I mean, it's got a stacked cast. Hunter Schafer apparently in one scene from what I'm hearing. How hyped are you for a Yorgos in the summer release, which is, I also love anytime like a big, like art housey kind of movie comes out in the summer for a little bit of counter programming.
I am very intrigued by the lobsterification of Jesse Plemons. And yeah, this is definitely a big, big pivot from Poor Things and The Favorite because Yorgos is going back to contemporary mode.
It's premiering at Cannes. So we'll start getting some Letterboxd reviews coming in soon from the big film festival, right?
The big, big film festival. Yes, yes.
But one that film that we've got reviews on from Letterboxd, from other film festivals, some other ones. It's not just Cannes out there. Number 4 on the list, I Saw the TV Glow. It is in limited theaters now, but unlike The Fall Guy, we decided to include this one because it's just in New York and LA. So if you're listening to this in New York and LA, go see the movie, whatever. You're not cooler than me. It's coming out. It's expanding though. It expands May 17th from A24, directed by Jane Schoenbrunn. The synopsis, teenager Owen is just trying to make it through life in the suburbs when his classmate introduces him to a mysterious late night TV show, a vision of a supernatural world beneath their own. And the pale glow of the television, Owen's view of reality begins to crack.
Let it out.
For myself, I'll say I've been making an effort. I've been going back to the movie theaters. I've been doing it more regularly this year. It's been nice. And you guys know, I've talked about it on the show. I don't really watch trailers. I don't like watching trailers. I like to go into movies knowing, you know, as little as possible. But being back in the movie theater, I'm seeing some of these trailers and it's been, you know, I like seeing the trailers. Some of them have even convinced me to see a movie. I had no interest in that Abigail movie. I saw that trailer. It looked fun. I went and saw it. You know what? It was fun. Anytime the trailer for I Saw the TV Glow comes on, I cover my ears, I close my eyes, I hang my head down, I hum a little tune to myself. I don't want to know anything about this movie. Like, I don't want to see anything about this movie. Like, I am so amped for this movie, guys. I haven't been reading reviews. I've just been seeing the buzz, little bits of it trickling in from Sundance premiere. People like, oh my God, this is going to change everything. I'm so excited for this movie. I don't want to know anything. I'm there opening day. What about you guys? Mia,
here's some stuff about the movie.
Mia, you see
it. Now
I'm
going to tell you every single plot detail about the film I Saw the TV Club.
You guys talk about it. Just yeah. Ring out. I'll put some
corner.
Sort of red light on in the room. Slim, you just make that light go off when it's time for me to come back.
No, I'll be very careful. I will be very, very, very careful. Don't worry, everybody. So I did just get to see this recently. I was not expecting to elegantly weep at 10 a.m. in this weird Manhattan screening room in front of a bunch of New York strangers, but that is what happened. It's so unique and it captures this very like amorphous, hazy, nostalgic, specific feeling of just like being a kid in the 90s watching these weird young adult supernatural shows. Like it is just so specific to that experience and I don't really get to see that on screen, you know? And there are also just so many interesting themes it touches on too. Like it's about intense friendship and parasocial fandom and how TV and movies feel like legitimately real when you're a kid. Like those characters are real and they're my friends, even though I still feel that way as an adult. But it feels like even more real as a kid. And it also just touches on trans identity as well in a way that never feels like heavy-handed and treacly or preachy or anything like that. Like, these characters just get to exist. And I love that so much. It's just, I cannot say enough praise about this movie. It feels like, to me, it's like trans Videodrome meets Twin Peaks. And like, what? That's just cool. Like, that's just cool. Objectively, what? It's awesome.
Yeah, I'm in there. I very delicately was looking through some Letterboxd reviews just to see like some vibes. And I did see this one review from Skull Squisher, which is a very cool username on Letterboxd, who said, I saw the TV glow, an unrelenting, nightmarish love letter to those who have felt more at home in their favorite TV show than their own bodies. And I feel
exactly. Yes.
As like a person who's grown up queer, who like is trans, who like I very much have like I've felt more at home in TV shows and movies than like in my own world and in my own body and in like my own relationship with how I'm perceived in the world. So like this feels like it's gonna destroy me in so many ways, and I can't wait. Slim, TV Glow, vibes?
I saw the trailer. Like, so I had a screening invite for Civil War that I wasn't able to make because I was going to see Monday Night Raw. So I went to see Civil War on the weekend. So I had to see all these trailers for like the first time because I don't usually see the trailers in the screenings. And first of all, there's a lot of good movies coming out. Like, I was like thinking to myself, like, man, this is a great summer for movies. But then this trailer came on and I was like, WTF is going on here? And it's kind of hard to do that with a trailer, I feel like, these days. You know, it's difficult to make kind of someone wowed by a trailer, but it was just so well done. So yeah, I'm excited to see it. I can't wait to see it.
Okay, wait, there's another movie with a trailer that has taken the world by storm.
No.
It is Furiosa, a Mad Max saga. This is coming out May 24th via Warner Bros., and it is directed by the god, George Miller. So, we don't even really need a synopsis for this. Come on, y'all. It's just a prequel to Mad Max Fury Road, and it's all about our girl Furiosa, played by the wonderful Anya Taylor-Joy. So, loyal listeners.
Yeah.
You already know that we covered this in the 2024 preview. And, you know, there hasn't been a ton of development since then. We just know it is imminent. Like, it is coming. We cannot and will not stop it. So instead, how do y'all feel about the Mad Max series in general?
I tried to think back to the first trailer I saw for Fury Road. Like, was I, like, amped for Fury Road? Or did it not hit until I actually saw Fury Road? So that's like the same kind of feeling I have for this trailer. Like, yeah, it looks cool. It's not like making me like super amped to go see it. But so I feel like I need to experience this movie in the same way that I needed to experience Fury Road, I think.
Yeah, I remember for me, especially with Fury Road, it was like, oh, they're doing a legacy sequel kind of thing to a movie where the last movie was Beyond Thunderdome, like, what was like 30 mm-hmm. years ago at that point or whatever. So like, I was like very hesitant about Fury Road. And then within 5 minutes of being in the theater watching it on opening night, it's like, oh, this is unbelievable. Like what he's doing here. So the trailer for Furiosa like really has not gotten me peaked at all, I would say. It looks fine, I think. But I also am like seeing what George Miller does on the road there, like in the theater, is probably going to be insane. Like once again, like mm-hmm. how could it not be? The
man, IMAX.
The man knows how to deliver.
I'll just say that when I have a similar thing where like it was coming out when Mad Max Fury Road was coming out, I did not care at first. There, I'm admitting it. And then the reviews were so stellar, and then it also made a bunch of dudes mad. Remember how mad guys were getting about Furiosa and Mad Max Fury Road and everything? And I was like, okay, I'm gonna go see it just to spite these guys. And then it was effing amazing. I rewatched it about a year ago in a Planned Parenthood waiting room. And it actually really hits like that. Yeah, I don't know why it was on, but it was. And I watched a good chunk of it. And I was like, this is actually how you're supposed to experience it. So that's my story. Okay. That is my beautiful story.
It was beautiful. I agree.
Thank you.
Another movie that we covered previously, so we won't spend too much time on, at number two, Deadpool and Wolverine, July 26th. directed by Sean Levy. I don't think we really need to read the synopsis for this one. Deadpool and Wolverine. It's an alternate universe Wolverine. I think Deadpool is into hijinks, and this is how they bring him into the MCU, folks. So I, you know, everyone knows I'm a big nerd, comic book nerd. I'm excited for this. I'm nervous, excited. I actually thought it was the same previous director as, you know, a 5-star rated movie, The Fall Guy, but he has not returned. It's Sean. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I'm almost too afraid. I mean, after our last segment with this movie with Mitchell, we might have gotten legal letters for Mitchell's thoughts on this franchise. So Mitchell, just tread carefully. That's all I have to say.
Did you guys see that conference recently where Kevin Feige was talking about, like, he was like presenting their Marvel's like slate or whatever, and he starts cursing, and he's like, he's like, oh, we got Deadpool in the MCU now, so we can curse, F this, F that. And it just seemed like a 10-year-old discovering how to curse for the first time and like doing it behind their parents' back, like, oh, thinking they're getting away with something. And to me, like, that's the vibe of the Deadpool movies. In general, I feel like there's, oh boy, the Deadpool movies.
I do think that, like, this is going to be one of those movies that is probably going to be spoiled, if people care about Deadpool Wolverine spoilers. Like, there's going to be stuff online probably constantly after this movie comes out, just because of the vibe I'm getting from the storyline and how many, you know, cameos they're probably going
to. I heard they were doing reshoots right now just to add in more cameos.
To add in more Matthew McFadyen, the star of the show. I need the spoiler that tells me how much Matthew McFadyen is in the film.
You need to know if you need to see it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because if there's like more than 20 minutes of him, I'm like, oh, I actually have to check that out for research.
All right, guys. Let's talk about the number one most anticipated movie of summer 2024 on Letterboxd, Maxine. Coming out July 5th from A24, directed by Ty West. This is the third movie in the Mia Goth, Ty West, X, Pearl sort of trilogy that they got going on. This one, in 1980s Hollywood, adult film star and aspiring actress Maxine Minx finally gets her big break. But as a mysterious killer stalks the starlets of Hollywood, a trail of blood threatens to reveal her sinister past. What are you thinking about this one, Mia? Hollywood, 80s, adult film, all of your favorite things.
Oh, my favorite things, yeah. listen, I really enjoy watching movies that are about making movies, even when it's The Fall Guy. The Fall Guy is also about making movies. You know, these movies are being made by people who make movies. Like, there is an inherent joy embedded in there, which I it's really compelling to me. So I am excited for that aspect. I'm excited to see Elizabeth Debicki be very tall. And I am also excited for all the Pearl heads out there, because I remember Pearl was just so big culturally, on Letterboxd, online, everywhere. Like, people were talking about Pearl, much the same way people will be talking about Maxine. So I'm almost more excited to see, like, the reactions from people about this movie. That's not a slight towards the movie.
Can it do it? I mean, yeah, the buzz for, like, Pearl was, like, out of this world on Letterboxd. Like, anytime we posted anything about Pearl on our social media, like, the engagement was through the roof. And Slim, you talked to Ty West about Pearl, right? So what are you thinking about Maxine? You hype for this one?
I'm super hyped.
Do you slam down? Do you hate Ty West after that conversation you had with
him? Me and Ty are, I'm crossing my fingers on camera right now to signify how close we are. I really liked Pearl a lot. I had a lot of fun. I did not love X, so I think that's what made me more excited, because, like, as this journey of this character over the trilogy progresses, after I saw Pearl and, like, that crazy ending, I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm pretty invested and now excited for Maxine. And Maxine was one of those trailers that I had seen when I saw Civil War in theaters, and another great trailer. And, you know, some of my friends have not even seen Pearl or X, but they saw the trailer for Maxine and they're like, okay, I need to see this. So it sounds like Ty is doing all the right things to kind of get people invested in this, you know, kind of weird franchise, right? It's like not your normal film franchise.
The fact that this is like a franchise and is like one that, like, I mean, the fact that, like, Maxine, an A24 like horror movie. That's the third film in this weird little franchise they're doing, like an 80s Hollywood horror thing, is the number one most watchlisted movie on Letterboxd right now, like above Deadpool, yeah, above Furiosa. Like that's super rad to me. Like it hasn't played at festivals or anything, so it doesn't have like buzz from that. Like people are just so amped about getting back into this world. And I agree, like the trailer hits. There's definitely like some stuff in it. They're working in like movies. There's like a whole thing of her going to the Bates Motel and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, I don't know. That seems a little bit American Horror Story vibes kind of to me. Like, but we'll see. I mean, like you, Slim, I wasn't crazy about X. I liked Pearl a lot more. Maybe not quite to the level that some people on Letterboxd did, but definitely like solid, very solid 3.5 for me. So maybe Maxine does get me above. Like maybe if the trend is still going upwards, Maxine could really let it sing for me.
I'm going to defend the Bates Motel inclusion because because she is on the Universal backlot.
Well, that's the thing where I'm like, okay, maybe it's fine.
And you I'm know, like,
it's not, she's
okay,
not going to the Bates Motel. Yeah. Like, it's
I'm like, okay, anything that's making a reference to the Universal Studios tram studio tour, like, I am so down. I love seeing the Bates Motel house on that dang tour. Yeah. So that's
I kind of like the idea of like a haunted movie, like on like studio lots. It's kind of like Scream 3 is the one, right, where they're shooting the movie.
Yes.
And so it's like she's being chased through the set,
yes,
of like her house in the neighborhood. And like that sequence, especially in Scream 3, is like one of my favorite things like in the Scream franchise. It's so cool.
Yes,
so.
Scream 3 defenders, rise up. Yeah.
All right. So those are the top 10 most watchlisted movies. Maybe we have some movies that we're interested in that are not in the top 10 that we'll just talk about super quick. Each of us have two. My first one is Alien Romulus from Fade,
yes,
Alvarez. I will be there day one for any Alien sequel, no matter how good or bad it is, in theaters. I love this franchise. And this is the cinematographer that I was talking about earlier from Gretel and Hansel that I thought was just pretty wild cinematography in that movie. But I saw they re-released Alien for the 45th anniversary. So we went to go see that in theaters and that was fun. And they did like a little interview with Fade and Ridley to kind of prep you for the re-release, which I thought was cool. So I'm amped to see Alien Romulus. I don't know about either of you two, if you are into Alien as much as I am.
Oh, I am extremely into Alien. I actually have a little Alien egg behind me that you can't see. But yeah, I do. It's just one of the best franchises. Like, I will tune in no matter what to an Alien movie is how I
Hell
feel.
Yeah. My other pick is going to be, oh, I had it up and I just lost it. Let me pull it up here. Shockingly, is going to be the new The Crow movie with Bill Skarsgård as the Crow. And I'm interested in this just because of like every Crow nut that I know was pretty much feeling ill after they saw the trailer, like the stills that they released of Bill as the Crow. So I'm almost like morbidly curious to see this movie. The first movie I love, it has one of the greatest movie soundtracks ever made, still holds up today. Amazing soundtrack. So those are my two picks.
I'm going to call back to, you know, a little movie called Old I referenced at the beginning of this podcast. And my boy M. Night, he's back in business, baby. In August, Trap, starring one of my beloved heroes from my teenage years, Josh Hartnett. He also, also we're back. We're back, Josh Hartnett heads. He was in Oppenheimer. He was great in it. We're doing it, guys. He is the lead in Trap. It is, I can't believe this is only on 29,000 watch lists. Even after that trailer, people, like, get with it. The trailer is so cool. I know people have been complaining, oh, the trailer gives away too much, whatever. You ask me, I'm watching that trailer. That's probably the first like 15 minutes of the movie. I feel like they're holding a lot of stuff really close to the vest. I'm so excited to see another M. Night Shyamalan movie. Like, he had that fallow period. We don't like to talk about The Last Airbender. We don't need to mention After Earth, whatever. Like, it never happened. He's back. Old rule, Knock at the Cabin was great. Like, he is on such a good swing right now. And I just feel like Trap is going to be like the raddest time in the world.
Yeah.
I don't know. Are you guys hyped for Trap?
Trap reminds me of Saw Traps. like I hear trap and it's a horror movie, I'm like, Saw Trap, I'm in.
People put M. Night in this, and as well they should, they put him in the same league as the David Leitches, the Sean Levys. So I'm very excited. I have not watched a trailer, mainly because people watch the trailer and be like, I can't believe they gave away all that in the trailer. And I'm like, all right, I guess I'm just not going to watch the trailer then. I'll just go see it and without seeing it. So I'm excited to see it. I like it.
All right. Well, I don't know what Slim was talking about there for a minute. He kind of cut out a little bit, but something about some directors. I would assume that one of the great directors he was talking about is Kevin Costner, who is back. We're like, you know, he's directed three movies up until now: Dances with Wolves, The Postman, The Beloved, The Postman, and Open Range. His last one, Open Range, was over 20 years ago. Back in business now. He's taken all that Yellowstone clout and he's cashed it in. He's cashed it in for this huge, expansive Western project, Horizon, an American saga. We got chapter one coming out in June, guys. But if that's not enough for you, they're like, you know, all these other movies, you know, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, part one, they changed the title before even releasing part two years down the line. Let's just throw out Horizon, an American Saga, chapter two. Let's just do it 2 months later. Why not? He wants to do two more after that? What is going on in Kevin Costner's world? I'm so excited for it. I'm a really big fan of Westerns. I've been getting really into Westerns this year. Stoked to see a huge one on the big screen, over $100 million put into this baby. And I kind of got to respect this huge swing that Costner is taking. I was reading that story the other day where Chris Hemsworth was talking about how he like spent an hour begging Kevin Costner to cast him in some new movie. And Costner just cast himself instead. And Costner said, it's a love story, but as long as I'm still young enough to play it, I'll play it. Chris will have to wait his turn. And oh, I just, God. the cojones to be Kevin Costner, you know, you're aging a bit there, buddy. And to be like, oh, Chris Hemsworth wants to be the lead of my movie. Nah, I'm good. I got this covered. Like, I don't know. That's crazy to me. I can't wait to see whatever this movie is. I feel like between this and Megalopolis, it's like these two old dudes just taking whatever cash they have and being like, hey, the world's probably ending in like 2 years anyway. So like, let's just go all out, put everything into this movie. I'm hyped for it. I don't know. Not a lot of people have put this movie on their watch list on Letterboxd. I don't know.
Does not
Horizon,
feel like
American Saga is a Letterboxd demo kind of movie.
No way. No way. I saw like
the
I don't know if it was
Pearlheads out there.
Pearlheads are not going day one to see Horizon Part One in American Saga. I don't think.
It's just gonna be me and all the grandparents out there in the theaters for this one.
Mia, what are your movies that you're looking forward to?
Oh, I feel like mine are quite different from all the ones we have just listed. Because
give us some variety,
I got a little
Mia.
Get bit
the,
of variety.
Get the cinephiles
yeah,
in here.
Yeah, here we go. I'm excited for Janet Planet. So this is written and directed by the playwright Annie Baker. It's her feature film debut. So Annie Baker is the brain behind the Pulitzer Prize-winning play, The Flick, which is about a bunch of movie theater employees. Hey, come on, y'all. That should sell you. So this film is about an imaginative 11-year-old girl who, get this, is not named Janet. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Huge plot twist. But it's just, you know, it's just a quiet little coming-of-age drama that has, it was, it's been playing at festivals. It's been getting good reviews. It's at a nice, healthy 3.6 right now on letterboxd.com. Quite excited for it. I'm also excited for Sing Sing. So that one played at South by Southwest. I have heard from my friends who were there that there was not a dry eye in that house. It is an emotional tearjerker about a group of prison inmates who find purpose through a theater program and the arts, and it helps enrich their lives. And friends have also told me that it really reminded them of Short Term 12, which is one of my favorite movies, very, very highly rated on Letterboxd as well. So I'm very in. And also, Colman Domingo stars. I kind of buried the lead there. He is the star. He's a fantastic actor. So I'm excited for that.
Like Colman Domingo.
Yeah. Last thing I'll say about DD is that I'm just very excited that it is about a Taiwanese-American boy, because so many of these coming-of-age films, while they are very relatable, they are quite white. So I'm excited for all the Taiwanese Americans who get to see their coming of age portrayed on screen, especially because it's directed by Sean Wong, did the incredible Oscar-nominated short Nai Nai and Weipo. So watch list that, y'all.
Watch list it or else. All right, we're running out of tape. We're rapidly running out of time as we watch the clock. But we have just a few quick things to do. We got to go back to our watch lists. Two of us, anyway. Ah! We have to shuffle our watch lists. We did it last time. I ended up getting Death Wish 3. I remember nothing from Death Wish 3. I think I'm trying to block the franchise out of my mind. But I'm going to go to my watch list. I'm going to filter by movies that are on streaming services, and I'm going to sort by shuffle. So the first movie that is now at that list is what I'm going to have to watch before we record next. Hello. The Face of Another from 1966. A businessman with a disfigured face obtains a lifelike mask from his doctor, but the mask starts altering his personality. Mm-hmm. There's a 5 bang in here from Mitchell. This is streaming on the Criterion Channel right now, so that's my movie that I'm watching next.
Yeah, that's a good movie. That's a good movie. 5 stars. Oh my God, yeah. Slim, you also quickly say, you guys on your other podcast, no big deal, you have another one, 70 millimeter pod. I came on recently for your 60s month. I chose Seconds as my movie. I was very close to choosing The Face of Another as my pick. It is like Japanese new wave to the max. It is so good. It's a crazy movie. It's amazing. Yeah. I can't wait for you to watch
that. Mitchell, are you ready to shuffle?
Yes, I have similarly... I have filtered, stream only, sort by, shuffle, and oh no.
Hubie Halloween.
Now I've seen and like Hubie Halloween. The movie I got, The Marksman, 2021, Robert Lorenz. It's one of these Liam Neeson movies, guys. Guys, I watch these Liam Neeson movies. He's Liam, the poster, he's just hanging out. He's got a rifle in his hand. He's looking down. Yeah. He's wearing a flannel and a vest. 2.5 average rating on Letterboxd. I'll quickly read the synopsis here. Jim Hansen's quiet life is suddenly disturbed by two people crossing the U.S.-Mexico border. Oh, God. A woman and her young son desperate to flee a Mexican cartel after a shootout leaves the mother dead.
Oh, my God.
Jim becomes the boy's reluctant defender. He embraces his role as Miguel's protector and will stop at nothing to get him to safety as they go on the run from the relentless assassins. This is on Tubi.
Of course it is. Course. That adds up. Likely place for it to be.
So I'll watch this at some point. Liam Neeson, we're doing it.
So Mia, you shuffled last time. Do you remember what movie you got last time we were all together doing a weekend watch list?
I believe I do. I believe I got Chilly Scenes of Winter, directed by my gal, Joan Micklin Silver. I guess the problem is that it's not winter right now, so I actually can't talk about it. They don't let you talk about it if it's not chilly in winter. Sorry.
Can't talk about it.
Yeah, I'm actually under embargo. It's embargo. It's a seasonal embargo.
I didn't mention the movie that I got last time was the OG Roadhouse, which ruled. One of the greatest movies ever made. It was fantastic. A lot of fun. Whole blast.
So wait, that was a first time watch, right?
That was a first time watch for me.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
And
yeah.
It rocked my socks off. And then soon after that, they released a remake that is a steaming pile of garbage.
Oh. Well, you know what, Mitchell? At least you watched your film. I love that you watched your film. Here I am admitting, hey guys, you know what? Chilly Scenes of Winter, not actually under seasonal embargo. I simply forgot. Ha ha ha. But
you got to watch them quick or else you forget.
You really do. You really do. But I'm going to shuffle again. And then I'll have 2 films to watch.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. I'll have 2. Wow.
Right?
This has never been done.
Is that how it works? Okay.
Let's do it.
Okay. So I also got
Halloween.
The Marksman, directed by Liam Neeson.
Well, no.
Or star Liam Neeson.
Mitchell, it actually does star Liam Neeson, this film that I got. It is the film Schindler's List.
Whoa.
Wow.
Holy cow.
So I'm going to watch a beloved Liam Neeson movie that people have been talking about for years. Everybody ranks as one of the greatest ever made. And you are going to watch Schindler's List.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it'll be a really lively report from me.
Just carve out 3 hours in your schedule. Yeah.
Streaming on Prime right now. Holy smokes.
Yes, it is our number 13 highest rated film. 4.5.
Prime has ads now too, which is great because it'll cush it out that time. It'll give you some nice breaks in between, just kind of take care of that flow. Yeah. If you're really getting into Schindler's List, check out this ad for dog food for a little bit. See what that's all about.
Horrible.
All right, before we go, folks have been tagging the reviews weekend watch list in our absence. David left a Tombstone review tagged weekend watch list. I have watched this movie so many times in my life. I used to own it on VHS and would watch the hell out of it on repeat. Easily one of Kilmer's best roles. Love that movie.
Yeah. One of the greats. Kilmer. Mm-hmm. He's unbelievable in it. I want to read Tripp's review of La Belle Noiseuse. I don't know how to pronounce that one. A hypnotic journey into the artistic process that manages to bring up so many large philosophical questions without ever feeling like it needs to answer any of them. Aren't those the best kind of questions, the ones that aren't answered? I have seen that movie. It's very good. Mia, is there a review that you want to shout out, Mark? We can watch this.
One more. It is Mason on the film Critters. As fantastically trash as it ever was, Dad punishes the boy by not letting him watch movies for 2 weeks. That is child abuse, and I'd report him to Letterboxd for that. Yes, Letterboxd can handle things like that.
Please, please do, Mason. Yeah. Please.
Thanks so much for listening to Weekend Watchlist, brought to you by the Letterboxd Show.
You can follow Mia, Slime, Mitchell, that's me, and our HQ page on Letterboxd using the links in our episode notes. If you had the time, maybe consider rating the podcast on Spotify or leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It helps spread the word about the show.
Thanks to our crew, and thanks to Letterboxd member Trent Walton for the theme music, Eyes On. Weekend Watchlist is a Tape Deck production.
This is a Tape Deck podcast.